Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's My Pops Culture, starring my son Ben and me, his dad.
Do you really have to say it like that, Dad?
With our guest star, Tiger King's Carol Baskin. So hey, you cool cats and kittens, let's get to this perfect guest.
I think I'd prefer if the cat got your tongue.
Have you yet watched Paradise Lost?
No.
I haven't even finished telling you what.
No, because this is like a thing every time. Have you watched Paradise Lost? You're going to watch Paradise Lost. I feel like every time we discuss a thing, it's... when are you going to watch Paradise Lost?
But you cut me off because I wasn't even finished saying what I wanted to say.
I heard you say, did you watch Paradise Lost? Wait, and that was enough for me to know.
It could have been something different than what I was...
what were you going to say this time?
Have you watched Paradise
Lost?
No,
I haven't watched Paradise Lost.
See, cut me off again. Well, here's the thing. With Paradise Lost, I keep telling you it's such a great doc. You like all of these true crime doc. You like all these murder things. Yet, when I present something to you, all of a sudden you don't want to watch it. And I think a lot of times you don't watch it because your dad is... asking you to watch it. That's what I think.
I think at this point, there's probably a 20% case for that. But I, for the most part, it didn't cause any interest to me.
But why wouldn't it cause? It's a great, great documentary. I think the truth of the matter is, because the crime is so horrendous, you got frightened and didn't want to watch it anymore. And that's what I think it's all about. And end of story.
Well, the crime was what again? It was children being murdered?
Yeah, they little children were killed.
Oh, sorry that I'm not running at the idea of watching children being murdered.
I think it was because they had graphic images of their bodies and you creeped you out and you didn't want to watch it anymore.
And if that is the case, it's not the worst thing in the world. I think that we do at this point, we watch a lot of the same docuseries of present day.
We do.
You know, like watching, whether it's Making a Murderer or watching like The Jinx or... The Keepers, I feel like we're always pretty much tit for tat in terms of like watching current docuseries and like true crime docuseries.
You know what's interesting? Documentaries in general, when I was younger, nobody watched documentaries. They were these small independent films. They were at little small theaters if you saw them. Nobody watched documentaries. And all of a sudden now, a documentary or a docuseries, they're popular. I don't think really it was until The Queen of Versailles or Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore, where documentaries became sort of mainstream in theaters, where people went to a theater and bought a ticket, just like they would go see any other, mm-hmm. Whatever, that was Tom Cruise movie. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. And then I just think that streaming services just took that to the nth degree in terms of there's accessibility, there's rewatchability. You know, it's not as like, I got to go out and go to a theater to find this. I'm at home on my couch. They become part of the zeitgeist and part of this event, and we're building up ourselves to watch it. And I probably think Netflix is responsible a lot for that. Well, let's say like Making a Murderer, for example, right? Like Making a Murderer was a huge event docuseries, and it inspired people to... think that Stephen Avery was innocent or have petitions for his nephew to get released from prison. Right. And I feel like the Netflixes of the world and these streaming services have allowed for docuseries to become worldwide events where the audience is now trying to enact change for the subjects.
I agree with you. And I think also, too, that you've got a series which is true crime of, let's say it's either a crime that's currently ongoing or an unsolved mystery. And people like us can then go on to Google and start Googling the crime and start looking at other clips and other evidence. And we ourselves can become sleuths. So it's almost like we're watching it. And we also can go online and research it more or investigate it more. Mm-hmm. So you've got two ends of the spectrum you're able to jump
on. Yeah. The craziest one right now is obviously Tiger King.
I think Tiger King is a pretty amazing, it would be a true crime, right? It is a true crime. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty amazing true crime docuseries because it's just so outrageous. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that when it came on, when did it air? Like March 20th or 30th, something like that. It was right at the tip of the iceberg of lockdown for COVID, for the pandemic. So everybody was sort of home at that time. Mm-hmm. And everybody hooked into this, nothing else to do except watch Netflix and tweet about it or Facebook about it or Instagram about it. Mm-hmm. But it was crazy outrageous.
But do you think if it wasn't for the pandemic that Tiger King would be as large as it was?
We'll never know. Never know.
Because it does have all the things that a true crime series would have to make it popularized in the culture. You have outrageous characters. You have, even though Joe Exotic is batshit crazy the entire time, he's still a person that he's charismatic and he draws you in, and he's in prison and people either agree or disagree and want to enact some sort of change on there.
I think Tiger King and Joe Exotic, when I look at other doc series, the lead character has to be somehow compelling. Mm-hmm. And Joe Exotic is a compelling character. Then he's got his crazy group around him that adds to that character. And then he's got the whole Carol Baskin. There's this side story with the Carol Baskin thing where she's trying to shut him down and you're a bitch and I hate you. And then he's trying to kill her, you know? And isn't that what he was arrested for?
Now Joe Exotic's pissed off. Carol Baskin, crawl this fence and try and hurt any of my animals again? You can guarantee goddamn I'm going to put a trap in your ass.
Carol Baskin is so influential that Carol Baskin and Carol Baskin, I consider that bitch.
Yeah, I think it was the attempt of
murder.
Of murder or hiring
to murder. We're going to be talking to Carol Baskin. And Carol Baskin was an individual in Tiger King.
Yeah.
That was a side story. Mm-hmm. Correct. The focus was on him, Exotic Joe.
The focus was on him. I think there was one episode that was really a side story into her, but you know, she is the reason that he's in jail because he was trying to hire someone to kill her.
Let's refresh the backstory. The thing about Carol Baskin, she has a big cat rescue, which is she rescues big cats, tigers, what have you. Joe Exotic had a zoo, which he found was abusive to the animals. So she was spent time and money and energy trying to always shut him down.
Yeah.
He, in turn, retaliated by saying, oh, by the way, where's your first husband? I think you killed him.
Yeah.
So she was blaming him. He was blaming her of killing the husband as a retaliation of her trying to shut down.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening is he then threatened or was going to hire somebody to kill her.
Something like that.
I've never been asked to hire. I've never been, what am I trying to say?
Are you saying you've never asked someone to kill someone?
No, the other way around. Yeah. No one's ever come to me and say, hey, Marshall, I've got like $60. Would you kill this person for me? I've never had anyone proposition me with that type of a business deal.
I don't think you read much as killer to me. Like a man I would trust to murder somebody.
Well, my hair is pretty killer.
Anyway. 6 out of 7 episodes, it shows Joe Exotic with machine guns saying he's going to kill Carol Baskin, shooting these blow-up dolls of Carol Baskin, showing bullets, saying this bullet's for you, Carol Baskin. So that's 6 episodes out of 7.
Right.
The 7th episode delves into, well, there's some suspicions around her husband. We don't know and can't say for sure, but maybe she did. And all we can talk about after this thing is, oh, Carol Baskin killed her husband.
So you're saying because the Joe Exotic story ended with him in jail, the one unsolved mystery that there still is did this woman actually murder her husband and bury him in this big cat rescue?
Yeah, not even
by cats.
It's not even because we're satisfied with there's a ruling for Joe. It's just like, for some reason,
This is the part that
really attracted viewers and became such a thing online, of people online creating memes and videos and songs and you know, I don't know if there's death threats. I'm sure there's been some sort of like salacious material made out of this.
So she's collateral damage, let's call it that. She's collateral damage to this documentary, right? Mm-hmm. She's gotten, let's say, death threats, or she's been made fun of, or whatever.
Yeah.
But seriously, man, the listeners are going to want us to ask if she killed her husband. You know, it's not because I want to know. It's because the listeners are going to want to know.
Dad, no. We're not going there on the show.
What happened to her husband? Nobody.
I don't know what happened.
They say he just. She admits that he disappeared.
Yeah.
Right? She admits that he disappeared.
Yeah.
Where is he?
Why don't we just get into the interview and not sit here with you speculating of who.
So you're basically saying to me right now that I can't ask her that.
No. Let's just talk to her about her and not about that.
You're saying you need me to behave.
Yes.
Okay.
Or I'll feed you to some tigers.
That's nice.
Let's get in the interview.
Okay. So what button?
I'll figure this out. You just sit
there. Is it that button?
Okay, it's fine. Don't worry.
Did you kill your husband?
I think this is such a great idea that you guys have come up with for a cross-generational audience.
I can't believe we got a compliment from Carol Baskin. That was so nice, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just say, we are so happy to have you here. We are thrilled that you're here on our wonderful father-son podcast.
Yeah, it was when my dad called me. When did you call me? Was it like 2 weeks ago? That
I call you more often than that.
Yeah, you call me every day. But when he called me that you were coming on, I was just like, I don't know how this happened, but I was just ecstatic. So thank you for this.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I wish I could get my daughter to do these with me, but there's no way she would ever do this.
I'm locked to the table right now. I'm here against my will.
Can I backtrack?
Yeah, do whatever you like.
I thought today, Carol, you would have your headpiece on. And I wanted to ask you... Oh, see? She's got... Yeah. Yay! She's got something.
I mean, I love that it was close by.
Yeah, seriously. Where did that come from?
You know, I thought it came from a 1999 visit to Hawaii where they were doing this dance on the beach and the young women were wearing this. And I asked them what that was. And they said it was a haku lei, and that's what I've always called it. I've always called it a haku lei. I was a notary, and I would do wedding ceremonies here at the sanctuary, and I would wear the haku lei to celebrate their marriage.
A haku lei, is that how you pronounce it?
Haku lei, yeah.
Haku lei.
You know, like a lei that you wear around your neck. So it's haku lei.
But what does the haku mean?
It's something to do with the celebration of life. But I don't know because I don't speak.
But
that.
What's the difference if you wore it on your head, if you wore it around your neck? Isn't it, if you wore it around your neck, it's just a lei. But if it's on your head, it's a haku.
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Part of me is thinking that like haku means head, but I don't know. I thought for a second haku meant head, and
that's what I thought. Maybe haku meant head.
Maybe.
I don't know. I do not
now
know.
Now we're going to have to look it up.
Okay, so let me ask you. You know, obviously our podcast is about pop culture, and we wanted to have you on here today because of everything that's happened in your life in the past. Actually, it's almost going to be a year. But I think, but before we go there, let's find out a little bit about Carol.
Yeah.
And about, first thing I'd love to know is the Big Cat Rescue. Tell me what it is, the mission, all of that, please.
Well, thank you. Big Cat Rescue started in 1992. And it started with the rescue of a single bobcat, a bobcat by the name of Winsong. In fact, I've got a picture on the other side of my computer there. And she was being sold at a auction to what turned out to be a taxidermist. I didn't realize it at the time. I had done bobcat rehab and release since I was 17 years old. And so when the guy next to me started bidding on her, I just leaned over and I said, when that cat grows up, she's going to tear your face off. And he said, I'm a taxidermist. I'm just going to club her in the head in the parking lot and make a den decoration out of her. And so I started crying and my husband started bidding and we brought her home, but she had been declawed. And so she couldn't be released back to the wild. And so she was like the most wretched pet you could possibly imagine. And we were trying to find something that she could live with that she wouldn't bully. She was bullying my husband and my child and our German Shepherd. And so this guy said he'd sell us a kitten, but we had to come there in person, and it was a fur farm. And so we came back with all 56 bobcats and lynx from the fur farm, and then the sanctuary was born. But people started calling and saying, would you take my lion? Would you take my tiger? And I'm thinking, what? What are people doing with lions and tigers in their backyards? And so that became a real eye-opening experience for me. And very quickly, I figured out we were never going to rescue our way out of this problem. So in the 90s, we started seeking legislation that would ban the private possession of these big cats and stop the captive breeding, which is how I got in trouble with all the bad guys that then tried to hire hitmen to kill me. So it's been a progression. And if I could ask a favor of you,
yes,
people want to protect big cats. The biggest thing they can do is make a call to Congress at bigcatact.com. Bigcatact.com.
And what should they tell when they make that phone call, Carol? What should they say?
We have three different choices they can make. They can send a tweet, they can send an email, or they can make a call. And we have a little script there for each thing that they do, so they don't have to know a thing about it. It's all right there.
It's all there. Perfect. So it's easy. It's easy to support. I'm listening to you, and it's so foreign to me what you're talking about.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, we can barely take care of, like, one dog upstairs, and you're taking care of upwards of 200.
No, but even the whole industry, like, the fact that it's at an auction, they're auctioning off a big cat. There's a taxidermist dude. That, to me, is, like, so foreign from anything I've ever heard.
And yet, that was a big part of the problem when we were trying to get legislators to sign on to our federal bill to ban the cub handling and the private possession. They would say the same thing. They're like, surely that can't happen. There's already got to be a law against that. There can't be people with lions and tigers in their backyard. Nobody believed it was happening until they finally saw Tiger King. And now the whole world knows that this is a huge problem in the U.S.
Here's the interesting thing why we wanted to have you as a guest. And I think this is something Ben and I have talked about. Well, I know it's something you and I have talked about, about how something can become part of pop culture. And I guess first thing I want to know is, how did you become involved as an interview subject in Tiger King? I'm sure you went into it innocently, like, hey, I want to tell my story here. I want to tell what I think about this gentleman. And then the film became pop culture. Like, everything just blew up. So tell me a bit of the backstory, Carol.
So as part of what the sanctuary has been working on all of these years, which has been to end the abuse of big cats, we have invited film crews in nonstop from the very beginning. And the reason is because we feel like video is the best way to reach people. So for anybody who wanted to come here, whether it was a newscast or if it was somebody doing a documentary, we were more than happy to talk to them about the issues. And so when Eric Good and Rebecca Chaklin came to us, it was 5 years prior to Tiger King coming out. When they first came to us, they apparently had already run into that guy with the snow leopard down in South Florida in the back of his van. And they were like, how can this be legal? And they said, well, we want to make the blackfish for big cats. Did you guys see Blackfish?
I've seen Blackfish.
I actually haven't seen the whale.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
And that absolutely changed the way people thought about whales in captivity. Nobody wanted to go see a whale in a fishbowl after seeing the way these animals are being treated. And so that's what we were told we were working on. And the name of the documentary, they said, was going to be called Stolen Wildlife. So we were happy to have them back over and over again. When they started asking questions about the disappearance of my husband, I was happy to answer that, because the people who exploit these animals don't really have a good reason for it. They'll tell you that it's for conservation and to make people care about them. But what you'll find is that's really not true if you pin them down on it. And so there is no reason that they can give for what they do. And the only way that they can combat me, whether it's in legislation or just on the public stage, is to try and shut me up by disparaging me based on a tragedy that happened in our family. And so I thought, when I was answering their questions, I was just, you know, setting to rest the things that these people have said about me for years. What I had no anticipation of them doing was for them to go and try and find everybody they could possibly talk to who would say something nasty about me and then turned me into the villain of their show when they had held themselves out as being people who cared about protecting wildlife and protecting the tiger, especially in the wild.
Carol Baskin, crawl this fence and try and hurt any of my animals again? You can guarantee I'm going to put a cap in your ass.
Oh, here, kitty, kitty. Mama's got some treats for you.
So it was a huge shock to us to see the way that I was portrayed in Tiger King.
It sounds like you were duped, Carol.
Yeah, I was absolutely duped. And, you know, I feel so betrayed by these people because I really believed that they were doing something good. And I opened up to them on such a deep level and shared with them things that I had never told people before. And to have them use those things as a way of trying to make me look like this busybody, meddling kind of a person when Joe and I had never actually even had a conversation.
What I found really interesting watching the series is the story of the allegations of you and your husband and these theories that people are running around was such a small part in this docuseries. Yet after the fact, it was like all everyone wanted to talk about when it was really just such a tragedy that you experienced. And I was like, I don't even know how someone, when this is broadcasted on a world stage, like how, what even happens after that and how you feel and how people interact with you, people start perceiving you. And
like, there's three things that became part of pop culture from this: Tiger King, the film, you, Carol Baskin, and Joe Exotic became pop culture phenomenons. But you've had a negative. It's been negative for you, has it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when my husband and I saw Tiger King, I mean, in fact, we had reached out to the producers. We asked, you know, who do you know that could be working on this thing? And all of a sudden, they didn't want to talk about it anymore. So my husband and I sat down to watch it ourselves and see what this is about. And we binge watched it like everyone else did. And at the end of that, we couldn't believe that this was where they left it. There had been a podcast that was done the year before by Robert Moore. And he had done a similar type of thing where he had, you know, portrayed it as being this big feud between me and Joe. And then at the end, he said, but here's what I found out to be true. You know, this is who Carol Baskin really is. And all these people are saying all this stuff about her have absolutely nothing to base that on. And Joe was killing tigers and abusing these animals. And all these people in his orbit said so. And Tiger King never did that. And so at the end of Tiger King, as my husband and I were sitting there on the couch looking at each other, just gobsmacked, my phone started ringing. And it rang every 2 minutes for the next 3 months with people just screaming obscenities at me and telling me how much they hated me and how I was no better than Joe and the, you know, Free Joe group was all out there and saying that they wanted to kill me. They wanted to kill my family. They wanted to kill my cats. And I'm like, why would you want to kill the cats? And they were saying it was because these animals didn't belong in cages. And it was like, well, we agree on that. They don't belong in cages. That was my whole point. How did you miss that? But everybody missed that. And instead, they just, like you said, they just came laser focused on believing that I had killed my husband and fed him to the tigers. And I don't know why that became the focus of so many people's imagination. I just don't understand it at all.
It was a weird communal event, Tiger King, because it did coincide with the start of this pandemic. And I've always wondered personally, like, if COVID didn't exist and we weren't going into lockdowns, would Tiger King have gone off the rails to where it did? Or was it because we were all kind of at home in our houses, only being able to watch TV, that we were all just like drawn to this show that came out right around that time?
I think that it was a perfect storm, but I think I could take it even a step further in that right then, people were being locked down. On March the 15th, we had to close our gates to visitors because of COVID. And Tiger King came out 5 days later.
Right.
And everybody was so angry at being locked down, and they were so fearful for how am I going to feed my family? How am I going to pay my rent if I can't go to work, if I can't send my kids to school, if I can't do anything? They wanted somebody desperately to blame. But I think when Tiger King came out and Joe Exotic had this mantra that everything in the world that was wrong was my fault, it was the perfect opportunity for everybody to say, it's her fault. And I think that's why those memes became so ubiquitous out there. I just can't imagine that any television show would have had that kind of impact if it didn't have that kind of angst behind it.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What makes somebody want to have a tiger in their house or their backyard? Like, are these people crazy? Like, it just, I, as much as I'm not normal, I wouldn't want to have a tiger, raise a tiger in my house. I don't get it. What drives people to do that?
You know, people who live where there are lions and tigers do not want to have lions and tigers in their homes because they understand where those animals are in the food chain.
Yeah, yeah.
But here in America, I think we've become so Disney-fied. You know, we see people like Jack Hanna and Steve Irwin and Grant Kimmerer and all these guys that will take a cute little cub onto some late night show. And everybody thinks it's so cute, and they're all ooing and aahing and getting their picture made with the cubs. People see that, and they think, I want to be that person. I want to be the person who gets all that attention by having this cat on a leash and showing off with this cat. And so their dreams can easily be made true in our country because these cubs, when you use them for these photo ops, by the time they're 12 to 16 weeks old, they can take a finger off a child. And so they've got to constantly be breeding new cubs, and they're discarding these cats that are still mentally kittens until they're like 2 or 3 years old. But, you know, they can be a year old and be 150 pounds, 2 years old, they can be 400 pounds, and they're still emotionally kittens. So they're handleable to the people who have purchased them. But by the time they reach sexual maturity, when they get to be about 3 or 4, that's when they start killing their owners. Montecor was 5 when he went after Roy Horn. And that's when people are getting rid of them as fast as they possibly can. So I think it's because we've just lost touch with who these animals are and where we are in the grand scheme of things with them. And there's this huge desire by some people to have something nobody else has to show off.
So you're saying basically that these people have tigers either just to make some money off of them or to be the big man on campus type of thing.
Yeah, like some bravado almost.
Yeah.
I think so. And I think the reason that they choose tigers is because the tiger is, I think, by most people considered to be the most dangerous, the most fearsome. I think it's that desire to prove dominance over the most magnificent animal on the planet that causes people to try and do that.
You brought up Roy Horn. I don't know if, Ben, do you know who Roy Horn is?
Well, it rings a bell. Is it beyond my time? Is it more your time?
Siegfried and Roy.
Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, Siegfried and Roy, yeah.
That's
yeah,
so that. What Carol was saying is that the tiger was 5 years old, sexual prime, I guess what you were saying, and that's he attacked Roy. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like Roy's been... Well, Siegfried just died a few weeks ago, I believe, right? But I think...
They died within a year of each other, but Roy was mauled to the point where he was never able to perform again. That was back in 2003 by this cat.
I'm curious. What were your thoughts about Siegfried and Roy?
I think that they did probably the most damage to the tiger of any other two people on the planet. And the reason for that was that they were marketing the white tiger as being this royal white Bengal tiger, when in fact, the only way that you get a white coat on a tiger is through severe inbreeding. And that inbreeding comes with a lot of birth defects that cause the cats to have lingering problems if they survive, and it kills a lot of them. So because of the fact that they had created this huge demand to see white tigers, and white tigers were selling for as much as $60,000 a piece, it created this enormous market for people to be breeding cats extensively to try and create those white cats. And that is where so many of these cats in backyards and basements have come from, is from trying to breed for the white tiger. So I think that they did a huge amount of damage to both the cats who suffered in captivity and the fact that we have nearly lost the tiger in the wild during their reign.
Okay, I'm going to say something, Carol, if you're offended or upset by what I'm... Do you think karma's a bitch? Do you think, like, Roy Horn kind of deserved it? Like, I'm just... Like, I'm not... Nobody deserves to be mauled by a tiger, but you get what I'm saying? I'm embarrassing Ben.
I just don't want to ever think, like, oh, I don't want to wish tiger maulings on people because...
No, but if they're doing electrically prodding them and doing things that they shouldn't be doing, or they're inbreeding them, like, I'm sorry, maybe karma was a bitch. That's what I'm saying. That's... Carol's being very quiet over there. She's not...
Well, I never say karma is a bitch because my kitten manager here at the sanctuary, her name is Karma.
Oh, I did not know that. Now I really put my foot in my mouth.
I kind of wanted to talk to you about just this whole new idea of audience movements that are happening. And I feel like we live in this era where the documentary series have become, like, they're such pop culture moments in our world. And you look at something like the podcast Serial, or we look at something like Making a Murderer or The Jinx, and they've almost mobilized audiences to achieve something, right? Where Serial, we're like, let's look at this case again and see if we can release Adnan from prison. Making a Murderer, it's like, well, is Stephen Avery guilty or was he framed? And I know we kind of touched upon this with you in the sense of Tiger King happens when COVID happens, and there's this element of people are angry and they're pent up and they're looking for someone to blame, and you were caught in that crossfire. But I also wanted to just hear your take on why audiences are so drawn to movements now from documentary series.
I do think it is a really interesting phenomenon. And I think that it's doing a disservice to people who are true documentarians. I know a lot of them who have just been absolutely appalled at Tiger King and the things that were done in Tiger King. And so many of these, I actually listened to the podcast Serial, and then The Making of a Murderer. Of course, I watched that and didn't know anything more about it than that until Tiger King hit. And then I started really reevaluating some of the things I had seen. When you're being told that something you respect as being truthful, such as a documentary, is what you're seeing, then you come out of it thinking, well, that's just amazing. Here's all this stuff. I had no idea that this was true. And then you find out it wasn't true. And so when I look at all of the things in Tiger King where they would ask me a question and have me answer it. And then in Tiger King, you'd see them ask some completely different question and paste in that answer that I had given to something totally irrelevant to that. And I saw them doing that several times throughout the piece. And so I went through and created a page called bigcatrescue.org/Netflix, where I said, minute by minute, here are all of these lies that were being told in Tiger King. And here's the evidence where I have evidence, you know, things from the court records and such. But when you go back to The Making of a Murderer, I'm pretty sure that after they had actually duped all of these people into believing that this guy was framed and that he should be set free, then when you find out, well, actually, they just didn't show you the whole truth. And I don't know, I didn't follow up on the Serial piece to know whether or not there was more investigation done. But it's just shocking to me that those things are even allowed to happen.
Here's what I think is pretty amazing. You became this pop culture phenomenon, and then you were on Dancing with the Stars. Okay, so first of all, do you consider yourself a star?
No. In fact, when they called me and they said that they wanted me to be on the show, I thought, well, I can't dance, but it'd really be great if I could get to know some star there, because they're going to pair me up with a star, and then I could get them to go with me to DC and to talk about the bill, because it's always important to have celebrities on your bill. And so that was my first thought. And then I found out that I was supposed to be the star. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll meet somebody else on the show that I could actually get to do that.
So what was that experience like? What was that like?
It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done physically. I had never danced. It was a sin in my family to dance. And
sorry, it made me think that you're living through Footloose for a second, but it was a sin to dance?
Yes, absolutely. I was raised in a fundamentally Christian family. It was absolutely a sin to dance, to be in a swimming pool with members of the opposite sex. There was a lot of rules in my growing up.
What's the reason behind not being able to dance?
My guess is both the dancing and the swimming were concerns that you would have sex out of marriage.
Because that happens every time you dance, doesn't
Apparently.
It? Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every dance I go to, I basically get lucky.
Every dance we've ever been to. I've got children I don't even know about from my high school dances.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic that that's how you were raised and then you end up being on the biggest dance show on television?
You know, that was a hard thing for me to break to my mother, was to tell her where I was going to be for the next few months, because even though I had stayed in the church until my father died in 2016, and I had stayed in the church as an adult because I felt like, it's funny how you'll probably appreciate this, but kids always feel like they're responsible for their parents' happiness. And I always thought my father was smart enough to see that some of these things were just absolutely ridiculous, whereas my mother was so indoctrinated through her entire family to believe the things that she was preaching. And so I felt like as long as I went to church, they wouldn't argue. And once he was dead, it was like, I am so out of here. So having to tell my mother that I was going to be on Dancing with the Stars, I was wary of that. I did it, but I dreaded it. And probably had one of the worst breakdowns with my mother during that period.
What did she say?
It wasn't anything in particular that she said. It was just that feeling of disapproval and how it was embarrassing for her that her daughter was not raised any better than I was to be dancing on television.
I do see your point as the child in the scenario of wanting your parents' approval and being nervous, but just, yeah, it's just a fascinating...
Well, not even... I'm just looking at it from the fact that we're talking to Carole Baskin, who's known in pop culture only because of Tiger King, and then it moves into Dancing with Stars, and then their story comes up, which I find is a really interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
How life... Where life takes you that you didn't... If it wasn't for Tiger King, you wouldn't have done Dancing with the Stars and having to have a conversation with your mother.
So true, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And by contrast, it was my mother who said, you can do anything that you set your mind to. So that's why I thought, I can learn how to dance in 6 weeks. I was so wrong. She was
so
wrong.
Did you at least tell your mother you'd bring her home an autographed picture of Tom Bergeron at least to settle any woes she had?
Yeah, just like soften the water.
Soften it, yeah. There's something that I really, really want to ask you, and I'm sure, you know, the listeners of the podcast would want to ask you and really want to know, would be, I guess the question would be, did you ever think that you would be famous and this popular and part of pop culture?
No. And it was never my intention to be any of those things. I am really a one-trick pony. And I discovered very early in life, I was probably 8 or 9 years old, that what I wanted to do was to protect domestic cats and kittens from being killed in shelters. I feel like I'm closing in on fixing this big cat problem, and then I can get back to that. But this whole thing with pop culture and everything has just been a diversion.
If you were to see the producers of Tiger King who duped you, if you were to speak to them today, what would you say to them?
Well, they actually reached out to me just recently and said they wanted to clear the air. And I told them to just lose my number. They called my husband and he said, you know, you guys will, you'll either do the right thing and backtrack on all of this crap that you put out there, or you won't, but you're not going to get another chance to try and fool us into this.
But being a person who is known through pop culture, what does it mean to you now?
You know, it really gives me an appreciation for what people in that industry go through. And when I say that industry, it's people who want to be popular, people who either excel at sports or they excel at acting or singing or doing things to the best of their abilities so that they can have that kind of attention and admiration and people wanting to talk to them and have their autographs and all of those kinds of things. It really woke me up to what a miserable life it is for those people once they have that. And would they even want that if they knew what was coming? If they knew they were never going to be able to go anywhere without people constantly harassing them and trying to take a selfie with them and trying to get them to autograph things and being just freaking scary. I ride my bike back and forth to the sanctuary every day, 10 miles. And because of the fact that people know that I'm going to be on that trail, they will camp out on the trail to jump out in front of me to try and make me stop so that they can take a picture with me. And I guess they just don't realize that the whole thing that made that trail famous in their mind was the fact that hitmen have been hired to kill me on that trail. So don't come jumping out at me and scaring me that way. And in traffic, I can't tell you how many people have nearly run me over because they're so intent on taking a picture while they're driving that they just pull right in front of me and we both end up going off the road. And it's just, it's here it is almost a year later and it still happens on nearly a daily basis. So I can't imagine what it's like for the, you know, Lady Gagas or the...
I love how Carol put herself in the same category as Lady Gaga.
I could see a world tour, Lady Gaga and Carol Baskin performing on the stage.
Can you imagine? But it's pretty amazing, Carol. Like, whether it's a good way or a bad way, it's pretty amazing how people have sought you out after this.
It has been interesting, you know, especially given the fact that, like I said, with my phone ringing every 2 minutes for 3 months, the vast majority of those people were calling with hatred, where... as everybody that I have met in person has been just lovely. I mean, even these people that scare me half to death, I mean, they're all just, you know, they're being nice and they just want that piece of whatever that is that people get from connecting with a celebrity. I've never really understood that myself. I mean, that's why I can hardly name a celebrity because it's never been important to me. But there's something that attracts people and they've all been really, really nice. And all of the interviews that I've done since then have been people just being really nice.
I guess I'm wondering now, if you had to go back to the beginning of Tiger King, getting asked to do this interview, would you have given it up knowing what was going to come now, or would you still have done it?
If you ask me and my husband that same question, we both have different answers. He would say, absolutely not. And I would say, yes, I would. And the reason I would is because I feel like it has raised awareness about these issues. And I do think it is giving us more momentum on our federal bill. Our federal bill right now has 114 co-sponsors in the House. And we, for the first time ever in the Senate, have three Republican senators who have said that they're willing or very close to saying that they're willing to sign on as initial lead. And we've never had a Republican do that before on the Senate side. So that tells me that this has had an impact on Congress. And that's really something I couldn't have done otherwise.
Thank you so much, Carol. And listen, again, best of luck with everything, with it, getting everything passed.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks, Carol. Thank you. What button do we push here?
We'll figure this out.
What do I push, Ben? Do we just end it? Oh, there we go.
Let's see. I feel like this is going to echo where we both landed, but I was just surprised with who she was. I just feel like you watch a documentary, a docuseries, and you get an expectation of what someone is.
Because she was painted as a villain.
Yeah, as a villain, you know, little nutty. And then you sit with them for an hour and you're like, oh, this isn't that person.
Right. I thought she was lovely. I thought she had a good sense of humor. You know, you don't know what to expect until you actually sit and talk. You know, I didn't know what, I really didn't know what to expect with her.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't expect that she was, you know, grew up super religious and raised not to dance.
Okay. But... can we talk about that for a minute? Can we talk about that?
Oh, what?
That was like Footloose. That was Footloose. Like, don't dance. Yeah. Don't dance. You're going to go to hell and have babies. or the other way around. Have babies then go to hell.
Yeah, it's like her and Kevin Bacon growing up in the same town.
But can you imagine? And then she ends up having...
I mean, I feel like there are some people that should be told not to dance. Like, I should be told not to dance based on how I dance. It's not very good. But
the way you dance should be... You should go to hell for the way you dance. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I will say I'm happy you didn't take that conversation to a certain point that I thought you were going to.
What point?
There was a moment where you lingered on a question.
Which question?
You said something like, I'm going to ask you what everyone wants to know.
Yeah.
And I thought, for sure, he's going to ask the, yeah.
What, did you kill your husband?
Did you kill your husband?
Okay, can we just, do you think I'm that stupid that I would actually go and ask that question?
Absolutely.
No.
I think you would ask that question.
Said it that way because I knew that that would piss you off and I knew that you would piss your pants thinking, oh shit, is he going to actually say that? Do you think I would have actually gone there? She was so nice and lovely and say, oh.
That's why I was nervous. I'm this lovely woman's on the podcast and you're going to take it here.
Yeah. It was interesting. She brought up the Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, I didn't think that would get brought up. I didn't expect it to, just like how that was a very bad thing for tigers.
And she said that they were the worst thing that could have ever happened to a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost wanted to ask her, but what do you think about their magic? Do you think they're still good illusionists? Have you ever been to Vegas? You're not impressed by that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, anyways. But besides the tigers... did you like how they levitated?
Yeah.
Oh, she mentioned something about she performs marriages wearing the hakule. What is it called?
The hakule.
Hakule.
Yeah.
Hakule.
I think if I got married, it'd be nice to have it you talk, officiated by
you
Carol
talk,
Baskin.
I'm going to Google what a hakule
is. She just told us what a hakule is.
But it's just weird.
I just don't know why you need to Google when someone tells you what something is.
Okay, we were kind of right. She wasn't.
Okay.
She said it's about the circle of life.
Yeah.
It's a lei that represents the circle of life. So it says here, hakule is just simply a head, a lei for the head.
Okay, so it does mean a head lei.
A head lei.
Oh.
I was happy we had her as a guest.
Yeah,
I was
too.
Very happy. I think it was surprising. I think that was a surprising interview. You never know where our pop culture podcasts will take us.
I can't. Why are you speaking like that?
I'm trying to be like...
You're trying to be like grandiose and just talk like a person.
I was trying to be fun and you don't like...
No, I feel like you're talking out of your ass. Like, I just feel like I don't like that type of...
Okay.
I don't know. You're just breathy and airy.
Breathy. Big cats.
Just say, that took us to some different places I didn't expect and I was really surprised by it, but I also enjoyed it. That sounds natural.
Not really. No, I was just going to say, when we do these podcasts and we talk about pop culture, we never sort of know where it's going to go. And
no, but I'm happy where it went.
I'm happy where it went as well. Are we ending on that?
Yeah, let's end on that note.
Okay. Until we meet again. Okay. Goodbye. See you later.
Sweet.
And I actually like dogs. Well, that was a riot, wasn't it, folks? For this and more antics of this crazy father-son duo, keep tuning in.
Dad, do you really need to speak like that?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.